WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 16th of May. This is Arthur. I'm going to do a double billing from radio station in Detroit, WXYZ. Gentleman named Trendle, George Trendle, and Franz Stryker created a series. First, they created the Lone Ranger, which we'll have that in the second part of the double bill. But the great nephew of the Lone Ranger was Britt Reid, debutante publisher of the Daily Sentinel. So we'll just go ahead and begin. The original air date for this Green Hornet is the 27th of January, 1948. The announcer will let you know the title. Thanks.
Hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reid, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reid in the thrilling adventure of Hit and Run. Britt Reid had been working overtime in his office at the Daily Sentinel. Miss Case, his secretary, had been on hand taking shorthand notes of the conversation between the young publisher and a man named Schuyler. Two men across the street from the Sentinel building watched the window of Britt Reid's lighted office.
Hey, look in the window, Joe. Schuyler's standing up shaking hands with Reid.
Yeah, I can see him. He's just about to leave.
That dirty squealer.
He'll get all that's coming to him. Flash your light so Sammy can see it and be ready when Schuyler leaves the building.
Well, thanks for coming up, Schuyler. You won't regret it.
I came to you, Mr. Reid, because I knew I'd get a square deal.
Count on it. You can find your way at the elevator, can't you?
Oh, yeah, sure thing. Good night, Miss Case.
Good night, Mr. Schuyler.
11 o'clock. It's been a long day, Miss Case.
But, oh, golly, how worthwhile.
Too bad Schuyler wouldn't give us names.
Well, he gave us everything else about the liquor smuggling racket.
He certainly did. And when he goes to the district attorney with his story, he's going to make it very hot for a couple of members of the State Liquor Commission.
You really think they're involved in bringing stuff in from other states to, well, to avoid the state tax?
I'm sure of it.
Well, I'll go out to my typewriter and get busy.
Hey, just a minute.
Huh?
There seems to be some excitement down below in front of the building.
Oh, golly, look at the crowd down there.
Now, open this window.
Oh, there's a man lying in the street.
I'll call the switchboard and see if I can find out what happened.
Someone's taking pictures. I just saw a flash gun.
Hello? Do you know what's happened in front of the building?
It's Clicker Binney. She's on the job with her camera.
Well, what's the name?
And here comes an ambulance.
Thanks.
Did you learn what it's all about?
Mr. Schuyler is not going to be able to identify the liquor smugglers.
No.
As he left the building, he was struck by a hit-run taxicab. He's dead.
Hi, Mr. Reed. You buzz for me?
Yes, Gunnigan. Miss Case is doing a story on the man who was killed by a taxicab. I'm calling the composing room to stand by for a replate on page one.
Right.
Make room for a three-column cut. Miss Benny got pictures. She'll have them out of the dark room in a few minutes.
Good.
I'll play that Schuyler killing up. Get follow-up so it'll stay on page one for all editions.
Axford will keep in touch with me. He's at police headquarters.
What's the latest?
The police have several cab numbers from witnesses.
Several?
Yes. No one was sure of the number. The police are going to run down all the numbers.
I see. Well, have Axford stay with it until the driver's found.
How about a banner?
Good. I'll tell Henry to set one up.
Okay, Reed. I'll go get things moving.
Get me composing. How are you coming, Miss Case?
I'm almost finished.
Neville Henry, we're going to need a replate on page one and an eight-column banner for the next edition. I'm playing up that Schuyler killing. Huh? No, it was no accident. It was murder.
Hey, golly, Burke, it's tight. I am and hungry.
I don't know why you cops can't find a shorter way of locating a hit-run driver.
Maybe this will be the right one.
It better be. Suffering snakes, it's almost 10 o'clock in the morning, and me with no sleep.
There's a cab in the driveway.
Yeah.
License number 4061. That's the one we're looking for.
Well, we checked 4081, 4067, and 4087.
We'll go around to the front and see if there's any dents.
Hey, what's cooking?
Is this your cab?
That's right. Is anything wrong?
Where was this cab last night around 11 o'clock?
No, ass. I mean to say what?
Why?
Where'd you get that dent in the fender?
Gosh, I don't know. It wasn't there. Hey, listen, copper, what's cooking?
What's your name?
Pete Loomis. There's my license on the windshield. That picture of me ain't so hot, but you can see it's me, all right.
You say you don't know about the fender dent?
Nah.
Were you hacking last night?
Now, look, copper, I got a right to know what's up. Why are you here asking questions?
Maybe this picture on the front page of the Daily Sentinel will tell you. That guy on the street is dead from a hit-run driver, and we got the number of your cab.
Holy smoke, look, I didn't have no... Hey, holy mackerel, this is the guy.
Huh?
Here, right here in the newspaper. This guy's standing in the crowd looking at the dead man. He's the one. He was out here last night.
Suffering snakes. What was he doing here?
I tell you, there's something funny about this. I finished hacking last night around 9:30. I run my cab in the driveway here the same as usual and hit the hay early on account I've been doing a double duty lately. It's around 1 o'clock when I wake up, hear a car driving in. I hop to the window and see it's my own cab. So quick like a flash, I'm out of bed. I'm out here collaring a guy that's just getting out of the cab.
Hey, wait a minute, fella. Wait a minute. Take it easy.
What's the idea driving my cab?
It's all right. It's okay. I didn't hurt anything. If you just calm down.
Are those your pals that just drove up in the other car?
Yeah. They're square things with you.
Hey, you the guy that owns this cab?
Yeah, I am.
Well, look, buddy, we don't want any trouble. My brother made a mistake, and I'm here willing to pay it.
Your brother?
Yeah.
I'm his younger brother.
Every once in a while, he borrows a car. Tonight, he borrowed yours. As soon as I found out what he had done, I made him return your cab. Hey, here's $50. That should cover everything.
Oh, gosh. $50? Well, after all, $50 is $50. I don't want to make no trouble for anyone.
And the guy that gave you the $50 is the guy in the picture here in the Sentinel.
Yeah, that's it. This fella right here wearing the gray hat. You see him?
Well, what about him?
That's the guy. He's the one that came up in the second car, the one that gave me the $50 and said his brother was driving my hack.
Suffering snakes, Burke. I can't put my finger on it, but there's a story here somewhere. I've got to tell Reed. He'll know what to do. So I stuck right with Burke while he took Pete, the cab driver, into the cops' headquarters.
Well, go ahead, Axford. Then what?
They brought in the cab and some of the boys went over it. There were a few threads caught on the bumper, and it was proved that they came from Schuyler's overcoat.
Then that was the hit-run cab.
Yeah, but there were no fingerprints on it to back up Pete's story that someone else was driving it.
What about Pete?
He was booked on a manslaughter charge.
What about his story of the man on the photograph?
The cops don't take much stock in that.
Oh. Well, very well, Axford. Now you better take the rest of the day off and catch up on your sleep.
Well, how about you, Mr. Reed? You've been up all night.
Well, I want to talk to Police Commissioner Higgins. I think I'll call him up and see if he's free for lunch.
Well, Brent, what's this? Another prelude?
Prelude? What do you mean, Higgins?
Our luncheons at the Civic Club seem to be a prelude to a night of activity on the part of the Green Hornet.
Why, do you mind?
What's it about?
Rum running. Smuggling liquor into this state.
Mm-hmm.
And a man named Schuyler who was killed last night by a hit-run driver.
I noticed that your paper gave heavy play to Schuyler's death. What's behind it?
I don't think his death was an accident.
No?
Schuyler was a member of the organization that's been smuggling liquor into the state. He wanted to get out.
Out of the organization?
Yes. He planned to go to the district attorney this morning and tell all he knew, including the names of the smugglers and the men on the liquor commission with whom they've been dealing. Schuyler knew he'd be involved and would need legal counsel. So he came to me and offered an exclusive story if we'd pay for his attorneys. He was killed as he left the building.
Did he tell you anything important?
He gave me some facts, some dates and places. But the information is worthless until we can fill in the names.
He didn't name his associates?
No.
Well, we're holding the driver of that cab on a charge of manslaughter.
I don't think Pete is the driver.
But it's his cab that killed Schuyler, and
Pete claims his cab was stolen. Didn't he show you that picture in the Daily Sentinel?
Yes, but
he claims that the man in the picture was with the man who returned the cab.
I know.
Higgins, one of the reporters identified the man in the photograph.
The police are checking on him.
I've already checked. His name is Thorpe. He has a rundown office on the second floor of an old fire trap building on 10th Street.
What kind of an office?
He's supposed to be in the investment business. But I think he's one of the group that's been bringing liquor into the state illegally.
And you think he had this fellow Schuyler murdered?
Yes, to keep Schuyler from going to the district attorney. It might be possible to break the smuggling organization through Thorpe.
It's probably quite useless for me to ask how.
Where is Pete's taxicab?
We're holding it in the parking lot at police headquarters.
What about Pete?
We're holding him in jail until he can furnish bail.
Can you keep Pete and the cab where they are until you hear from me?
I think so.
Oh, one thing more, Higgins. How many men are on watch at that police parking lot?
Well, it's right next to the station. There's usually a half dozen men around, including the tow car crew.
Not so good.
Why?
Is there any time when one might find fewer?
Well, I can always send the tow car out on some business.
If it could be arranged for just one guard to be on duty around, around 8 o'clock tonight.
It might be arranged.
Can I depend on that?
Yes, you can depend on that.
Higgins, you may hear from me directly or indirectly as the Green Hornet.
After his luncheon with the police commissioner, Britt Reed spent part of the afternoon in the vicinity of Thorpe's office. He examined the old two-story building from all sides and talked to a number of people in the rundown neighborhood, asking questions about Thorpe and his associates. After dark in his apartment, he called Cato, his faithful Filipino valet, to his room.
I have a plan, Cato, but we can't put it into effect until tomorrow night.
How is that, Mr. Britt?
Before the plan can succeed, Thorpe must see a certain news item in the Daily Sentinel. It'll be published tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
And tonight, we're going to make that news. Tomorrow night, we'll go after Thorpe.
What we do?
And we're going out as the Green Hornet. We're going to investigate Pete's taxicab.
Where is the taxicab now?
In the police parking lot. But there'll be only a single guard on duty. He'll not give us any trouble. Come on, Cato. Follow me.
There were over 600 cars in the parking lot behind police headquarters. Some were cars that had been found abandoned. Others had been towed in because of illegal parking. Still others had been impounded for various reasons. Britt Reed parked the Black Beauty nearby.
Keep your face well covered, kiddo.
Oh, yes, sir.
There's the guard right over there.
I see him.
Pete's taxicab is just beyond. You see it?
Yes, sir.
We'll get the guard from behind. I want him gagged and tied, but he must be completely conscious to see what we do. Quiet now.
Take it easy, copper, and you won't be hurt. No use struggling. You're going to be gagged and tied. Behave yourself. We won't be rough.
Get that rope around his wrist.
Yes.
That's it. I'll stay right here with him while I go through that taxicab.
Cato kept a close watch on the police guard, who in turn stared wide-eyed as the Green Hornet went through Pete's taxicab in a search that was far more complete than anything the police had done. He pulled out the seats and threw them aside, and then the floor mats. And then with a flashlight and a small whisk broom, he swept the bare floor, both front and back, collecting the dust in an envelope. Soon he was finished. Then he returned to the guard.
Sorry we had to inconvenience you. I'll call headquarters in a few minutes and tell someone to relieve you of that gag.
You think Mr. Axford will report what happened at parking lot?
Of course he will. And when his story comes in, I'll have a couple of suggestions.
Will you go to office now?
Not just yet. I want to examine Thorpe's office. This will be a good time to do it.
Thorpe's office was dark and deserted, which was just what the Green Hornet wanted. He examined the building from the outside, then let himself in through a window off a fire escape in the rear. When his observations were completed, he sent Cato and the Black Beauty home and went to his office to be sure the Green Hornet's activity in the police parking lot would appear in the next day's newspaper. It was the following afternoon when Sam Bates came to Thorpe's second floor office. He found Joe there ahead of him.
Come in, Sam. Close the door.
Said you wanted to see me, Thorpe.
I do. I thought I told you to be careful while you were in Pete's cab.
Careful? I was careful.
What did you lose in the cab?
Lose? I didn't lose nothing. You know how the cops went through it. They dusted it for fingerprints and everything else.
Yeah, but did you read in the paper how the Hornet went through it?
Well, what of it?
He found something that proves you were in that cab. And if he can prove that, it'll prove that Pete told the truth and I lied to the cops. Then where are we?
What'd he find? And how do you know he found anything?
He called me up.
What?
Yeah, just a little while ago.
He's coming here tonight. He says he's open to a proposition.
What kind of a proposition?
We'll talk about it when he gets here. He said he's got something he's willing to sell, and if we don't buy it, he turns it over to the cops.
Think hard, Sam. You must have left something in that cab.
But I tell you,
Skip it. You be here at 9 o'clock tonight. You and Joe can be hidden in the other room. I'll talk to the Hornet, and when I give the signal, you boys come out with your guns ready.
9 o'clock, huh? Well, I'll be here.
That night, the Green Hornet guided the Black Beauty to another spot near the police parking lot. But this time, his plans were quite different.
There's the same guard, Cato. We give him a chance to let out a shout of alarm, and we've got to get away fast and take him with us.
I understand.
I hope Axford and Burke don't let us down. All ready. Now.
Watch it. It's you again.
No, you don't. Leave your gun where it is.
Help!
You fool. Now I've got to gas you.
It's the Hornet! It's the Hornet, boys! Come back!
You asked for that. I have to carry him to the car.
My help?
I can carry him. You go ahead and start the car. Burke and Axford are right on the job. You drive while I tie the guard before he comes to.
Yes, sir.
Get going.
Stop this, Melvin! It's the Hornet again! He got the guard! Stop him! Get after him! Get that car!
Wait, Axford! Hold on! I saw him drop something when he was getting into the car.
You did?
Wait till I turn my flashlight over there.
I see it! It looks like a wallet.
Come on. I was sure I saw something drop.
Golly, a wallet! Maybe there's identification in it.
Here,
You hold the light. I'll inspect this thing.
Hey, Burke, you needn't snatch.
And you needn't be all the time interfering with official business. Now let's see what's in this wallet.
Nine o'clock found two men in Thorpe's office. Sammy paced the floor nervously, while Joe sat quietly examining a revolver.
Now get it straight, boys. When the Green Hornet comes, you two go in the next room while I sound him out and see what he has to say.
Is that door locked so you'll have to knock to get in?
Yeah.
Well, I wish he'd come and get it over with.
Relax, Sammy, relax.
That's good advice.
What, the Hornet?
Drop that gun. I mean you.
All right, don't get sore.
I must be slipping. I forgot about the fire escape outside the window of that back room.
Handy things, fire escapes.
Well, now that you're here, start talking.
First, I've got to make sure you boys don't play with firearms. Sit still, Thorpe. No gun, eh?
Never use them.
How about you?
Now, look here,
Stand still. Now, the meeting will be peaceful. One thing more. I'll unlock this door. I might want to go out that way in a hurry.
What's on your mind?
Over the phone, I told you I could prove that your pal drove Pete's taxicab and killed Skyler.
I know you went through the cab last night. What did you find?
It's in this envelope. The price is $5,000.
What if I don't pay up?
You'll pay, Thorpe. You've got to pay. You're involved in murder just as much as Sammy, even though you didn't drive the cab.
Even if you prove I drove that cab, you can't prove I ran Skyler down on purpose. The worst I'll get will be a charge of car stealing.
You're forgetting the things that had come out if you boys were taken in by the cops. Just remember that Skyler talked to a newspaper before you killed him. It won't take the police long to put everything together. They'll soon have the whole story about your liquor smuggling.
You're well informed.
You could be held without bail on a murder charge, and while you're in jail, the law could go through your books and files and learn about your rum running. And the men you've worked with. The men higher up.
Thorpe, you better pay him off. You can get most of the $5,000 back from Harold and Stanford.
Those are the boys on the liquor commission.
Sam, you talk.
What's
too
the
much.
Difference? This guy's got us pegged. Give him the cash and get that evidence.
Let's see what you got in that envelope.
Fair enough. Let's see the $5,000 in cash.
Hey, someone's coming.
Lock that door.
Hold it.
But if someone comes...
Stay where you are. I like company.
Come on, boys.
It's a law.
Where's that green hunter?
There he goes. That rear door.
You mugs, stand where you are.
Hey, what's the meaning of
Let
this?
Let me out of here. You got nothing on me.
Stand still. Watch these three punks, boys. I'm going after that masked hornet.
Burke, he's locked his door.
Bust it down.
Now, hold on. You can't come to my office.
Save it,
like...
Thorpe.
Here goes the door.
Good work, Ashford.
That window's open.
You guys keep an eye on Thorpe and his pals.
All right, Burke, we got him.
Burke, look outside this window. The guard is here on the fire escape, trussed up like a turkey for cooking.
Get that gag out of his face.
Burke, give me a hand first. I've got to drag him in. There he is. I got me knife right here. There you are.
Thanks. It was a hornet. The hornet brought me here.
We know it. We found a wallet he dropped. It had Thorpe's address in it.
The hornet's down there. You can see him getting in that car.
Todd Spalpeen. There he goes.
We better get out of
here. Now, wait, Burke. Listen to me. I heard all that was said between the hornet and Thorpe. I heard plenty. Thorpe admitted that he and his pals murdered Skelly.
But
that's not all. Thorpe named Harold and Stanford to the liquor commission. He was working with those two smuggling liquor into the state.
Well, about?
You'll find proof of everything at Thorpe's records in his office.
Come on, Buck. Let's go. And then, Reed, Pete picked Sammy and Thorpe out of a lineup at police headquarters, and Sammy broke down. He turned state's evidence and told all about how Thorpe plotted to kill Skyler.
Well, you must have had a busy evening, Axford.
Oh, that I did. And there'll be more tomorrow when the law calls on those two birds with the state commission.
Good. But what about that envelope you mentioned?
The one the Hornet tried to sell to Thorpe?
Yes.
Nothing in it but dust. You know, Reed, what with abducting the guard and dropping that wallet and leaving the guard where he could hear what was said, the Hornet couldn't have been more help to the law if he was a special agent or the police commissioner himself.
Axford, do you think the Green Hornet might be the police commissioner?
No, but by golly, I sometimes think he'd make a good one.
Sentinel XB Pepper Run!
papers. Read all about it. Police led the smugglers' office by Green Hornet. Sentinel X3 Pepper.
This copyrighted feature originates in Detroit, and all characters, places, and incidents used are fictitious.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
That was Hit and Run. The Green Hornet. Original air date was the 27th of January, 1948. You heard that. It was produced out of Detroit. That was WXYZ. The Green Hornet ran for 16 years from 1936 to 1952. I guess Jack McCarthy would have played the Green Hornet and Britt Reid in this 12th season, if I've done my research correctly. Lenore Case was played by Lenora Jewel Allman. Cato could be played by Michael Tolan or Paul Carnegie. I'm not certain. The original Cato was played by Tokutaro Hayashi. Sorry, I'm probably butchering his name a little bit there. What was interesting to note was Police Commissioner Higgins was wise to Britt Reid being the Green Hornet. I guess that came about in 1947. Again, this one was the 27th of January, 1948. It's about a year. Somebody knew about the Green Hornet's identity. Now for the second part of the double bill, it's a Lone Ranger. Again, created by Fran Stryker and George Trendle. This one ran for 8 years. I'm not sure. I have a 30th of January, 1933 on my notes here. I don't know if that's when the series originated or... Yeah, because I don't think I could find a title for this one. You're listening to Arthur on the Grand Hour. This is 91.5 FM, WMFO, WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. It's the 16th of May, and yesterday we got 1 3/10 inches of rain, according to the rain gauge at my garden. So here we go. We'll start off with the, let's start off, but here's the Lone Ranger for you. Thanks.
over!
Over! A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo, Silver! The Lone Ranger! With his faithful Indian companion, Tonto, the masked rider of the plains led the fight for law and order in the early western United States. The stories of his strength and courage, his daring and resourcefulness have come down to us through the generations. And nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear. From out of the past and the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse, Silver, the Lone Ranger rides again.
Come on, Silver! Let's go, big fellow! I'll Silver!
By nature and disposition, Luther Jones was the ideal assistant bookkeeper for the Cliff City Bank. His calm insistence that long rows of figures must have correct answers was as much a part of Luther as his shy smile and neat blue serge suit. But the calm was ruffled and the smile was missing late one afternoon when he knocked on the door to the president, J.B. Atwood's private office.
Yes, coming. Oh, Luther, it's you. I thought everybody had gone home hours ago. It's almost dark. Supper time.
Yes, sir. I mean, I know it, Mr. Atwood, but I've just discovered something that isn't right.
Is that so?
Ordinarily, I'd report it to Mr. Quigley, the head bookkeeper, but he's already left for the day.
Oh, report what, Luther?
As you know, sir, this is the end of our fiscal year, and I'm balancing the books.
Nothing unusual in that?
Oh, I'm afraid there is. I've discovered a shortage.
Shortage? Are you sure?
There's no doubt of it. I struck a trial balance early this morning, and I checked and rechecked my figures all day long. The final balance is short.
Have you any idea where the... have you traced the difference to any particular account?
Yes, sir. I'm sure it's somewhere in the new school trust fund account.
The new school... Oh, yes. Why, how much is it short?
3 cents.
What? 3 cents? Well, Luther, this is really funny. Imagine anybody worrying about 3 cents.
The amount may be small, Mr. Atwood, but the fact remains I can't balance the books until I find out where the mistake has been made.
Yeah, well, here's 3 cents. Now, is everything all right?
No, sir. We can't do that. It would be dishonest, just covering up a mistake.
Well, I'll be done.
With your permission, Mr. Atwood, I'll take the large ledger home with me tonight and go over the figures again.
Sure, you can do that.
I must have made the mistake somewhere, an addition or subtraction. I've gone through the checks written on that account. You're the treasurer, aren't you?
Why, well, yes, I believe I am.
But I can't find invoices to match the checks.
Well, they must be around here someplace.
So I took the liberty of writing a letter to the Acme Supply Company in Plainfield, asking them to send duplicates.
You wrote to the...
Isn't that the company from which you're buying all the wagons and building material for the new school?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Well, I should have an answer from them by tomorrow. Then it'll be easy to recheck the figures.
Luther, you're a smart boy. But you're working too hard.
Oh, no,
what
sir,
you
I...
need is a vacation. Come to think of it, aren't you engaged to marry that pretty red-headed girl I've seen you with? Melissa King?
Yes, sir. Melissa and I intend to get married when I'm making more money.
You are making more. I've just raised your salary. A big enough raise to get married on and take a long honeymoon.
Thank you, Mr. Atwood.
And your vacation starts right this minute. Don't come to work tomorrow. Take off 5 or 6 weeks.
Oh, I couldn't do that, sir. I couldn't leave until the books are balanced. I've got to find that shortage.
Well, of all the ideas... What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Atwood. It's my watch. It has an alarm bell. I set it to remind myself of important appointments. I have a date with Melissa tonight. We were going to a dance. But now
then
I...
Why don't you leave? Get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Saul Quigley will be at my house tonight. I'll tell him about your discovery of a 3-cent shortage. I'm sure he'll be interested.
Yes, sir. And if you want me, I'll be in my room at Mrs. Lane's boarding house. Good night.
The Lone Ranger and Tonto pulled their horses to a halt in the darkness of a side street at the edge of Cliff City.
Who's it, big fella?
Boarding house you told me about is somewhere near here, isn't it? Tonto, steady, big fella.
Big house at end of street.
Good. We'll leave the horses here and walk the rest of the way. Come on. You know, a lot depends on what kind of a boy Luther Jones really is.
Well, me see him in town today and think him plenty good fella.
I hope so. There's the house, Tonto. I'll go ahead. You wait here.
Luther, do you mean you're breaking our date because of 3 cents?
Well, yes, but it isn't the 3 cents. It's the principle.
There's no use talking about it. Any man who would do something like this is a nincompoop, a jellyfish. Even if I am engaged to him.
Oh, now, Melissa, don't cry.
I suppose Mr. Atwood asked you to work overtime, to spend hours and hours trying to find 3 miserable little cents.
No, it was my idea. The books have got to balance, or I'm not a good bookkeeper, that's all.
Oh, Luther, I guess you'll never change. Why can't you be strong, decisive, a man of action, like the man we read about in the paper over in Buena Vista?
You mean that outlaw who wears a black mask, rides the white horse?
He can't be an outlaw when he captured 7 bandits single-handed, then turned them over to the sheriff.
Melissa, nobody knows for sure that such a person really exists. Maybe they just imagine.
I bet the bandits know he exists. Oh, Luther, can't you understand what I mean? A man like that wouldn't let Mr. Atwood send him home to find 3 cents.
He would if he was a bookkeeper.
There's no use trying to explain. I guess I'll go to the dance with Chet Oakhurst. He asked me, too.
I hope you have a good time, Melissa. I'll see you tomorrow, after I've
Never mind, Luther. Good night.
Oh, women are harder to figure out than a final balance. Well, better go up to my room and get to work.
Hello, Luther.
What? Mask. An outlaw. What are you doing here?
I'm not an outlaw. I'm here to see you.
Why, how do you know my name?
An Indian friend of mine made some inquiries. That's how I knew where you lived. Is that book you have under your arm?
It's a ledger. I use it at the bank. There's been a mistake, a shortage. I brought the ledger home to...
You look for it? Good idea. Especially when a man known as J.B. Atwood is president of the bank.
What do you mean?
Several things. First, I'm convinced that you are one of the few honest men working in the bank. Second, a man who answers Mr. Atwood's description perfectly robbed a number of people back east not so long ago. Oh, how much do you think the shortage amounts to?
3 cents.
That doesn't sound like Mr. Atwood. Let's go over those accounts again. I'll help you.
But you must be an outlaw. You're masked, you're wearing guns, and... Unless
what?
Do you ride a white horse? Have you ever been in Buena Vista?
The answer is yes to both questions.
Then you must be... No. If that's who you are, you wouldn't be here talking to me. I'm just a bookkeeper, and Melissa said that... Oh, excuse me.
Certainly.
It's my watch. I must have set the alarm for the wrong time, and... See?
Yes, it's a nice-looking watch. Now then, we can go over the figures in that book together.
Oh, hello, Saul.
I did what you told me, J.B. Brought Sheriff Peters and Judge Bittner along.
So I see. Come on in, gents.
Hello, J.B. I thought Sal here had covered everything by fixing the books.
I did, but I guess I must have made a 3-cent mistake someplace and Luther found it.
Nevertheless, we've got to do something and do it fast. Peters, you and Quigley both handle guns. Get over to the boarding house where Luther lives. See that he isn't living when you leave there.
Yeah, but how?
That's your worry. But I want the job done now. tonight.
Here's the subtotal of the final entries. Now subtract that from the figures you have.
Yes. It's... Why, this can't be right.
Why?
The new school trust fund, instead of being short 3 cents, is minus $30,000. There's hardly anything left.
I thought so. It's what I expected from J.B. Atwood. See, his real name is Ashley. He always works just inside the law. That's why he hasn't been caught.
But we need more proof.
He can avoid this by blaming it on you. Who are the other trustees in this fund?
Judge Bittner, Sheriff Peters, and Sol Quigley. He's the head bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing you wrote that letter today. Now, you mentioned some invoices for building material. Where are they?
Down at the bank, I guess.
Good. We're going to find them. Come on, we can climb out the window and ride double on my horse to get there.
Yes, but is it right
to... Don't talk, Luther. Hurry.
Steady there.
What's the idea of stopping here? We still got
to... Look up ahead by Lane's boarding house. Ain't that Luther Jones?
Yeah. One of those other gents is wearing a mask. Must be an outlaw. Look!
Guess Luther ain't as lily white as Atwood thinks he is. And we're gonna follow him. Get up there!
Get up!
Luther, now go on inside, Tonto. You keep watch here, but stay outside.
Me do it.
Good. Lead the way, Luther.
This is Mr. Atwood's private office.
You think he'd keep those invoices in his desk?
I don't know what to think. You see, I've
never...
We'll
soon find out. Here, hold this light. Now, there's nothing that I... Oh, wait a minute. Isn't this what we want?
Yes. Those are the invoices.
Sally.
Plot to match, Luther. What is it, Tonto?
Two fella come up outside now. Me think one lawman, other fella work here in bank.
They must have seen the light. Quick, Luther. Give Tonto the key to the back door.
Why, if we're caught in here, we're... Here it is.
Bring the horses around there, Tonto. Hurry.
Me get them.
You're in here, all right. We got him dead to right. Must be in Atwood's office. Yeah. Come out of there, both of you. I saw the night start shooting.
They've got guns.
So have I. Keep down and you won't get hurt.
Guess we'll have to smoke them out. Open up, Tom!
The curtain falls on the first act of our Lone Ranger story. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments.
You're listening to Grand Hour with Arthur on 91.5 FM, WMFO, WMFO.org, Tufts, Freeform Radio here in Medford.
Now to continue our story. A few seconds after Sheriff Peter's shouted order, the inky blackness of the bank's interior was laced with flame and lead.
Can't go on, Luther. The gunfire will rouse the whole town.
Over there, Sheriff! Weapons behind the desk! Keep on coming on!
There's no use in forcing a showdown now. We can't prove anything.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to make a getaway. Leave you here alone. You're not afraid, are you?
No, but if Mr. Atwood, Judge Bittner, Sol Quigley, and Sheriff Peters are all in this together...
Remember when I told you up in your room?
Yes, I remember.
And don't worry. I won't let you down. This gunfire will stop as soon as I... Adios, Luther.
Look, Sheriff! Put him heading for the back door!
You're not shot.
Bullet hits your gun, that's all.
I tell you, it sure feels like...
I think it was the owl who
vamoosed.
You must have plugged Jones. Make a light
now,
Sam. Yeah, now, wait a minute. A lamp here someplace. There. Now we can see.
You didn't hit me, Sheriff. Didn't even come close.
Luther, come out from behind that desk and keep your hands up. You're under arrest.
All right, anything you say. But I haven't got a gun, and I won't resist arrest.
Luther!
Luther. I know you're not a bank robber. Won't you tell me the truth about what happened?
I'd rather not say anything, Melissa, even to you.
But they're going to have a trial this afternoon. Judge Bittner might sentence you to prison.
He will if he can get away with it. You can bet on that.
Well, who'll stop him unless you say something in your own defense?
Maybe one of those strong, decisive men of action you're always talking about.
Don't joke about it, Luther. Not now.
It's no joke. At least I hope it isn't.
Well, it seemed as though our worries of last night were groundless. Luther played right into our hands.
Yes, much better this way. I don't like murder.
It'll be better if you give Jones a stiff sentence at his trial this afternoon.
Don't worry.
I wonder who that owl hoot was who was helping Luther look for the invoices.
Just a saddle tramp, like as not.
Well, there's only one more thing to be taken care of, gents.
What's that, J.B.?
A letter that's coming over on the afternoon stage from Plainfield.
Well, what difference does it make?
A lot, Sheriff. After Luther's in prison, I don't want any loose ends to worry about.
But you can't stop a letter. That's United States mail.
Oh, yes, you can, Judge. And our sheriff and my bookkeeper are going to do it.
How, J.B.?
A little stagecoach holdup job. About halfway between here and Plainfield.
You mean just to get that letter?
Oh, no. Line up the passengers to make it look real. And pick up the mail sack as sort of afterthought.
Well, I don't like the idea. I'm the sheriff here in Cliff City.
You're also on my payroll. Now, don't forget that.
Hey, who's that Indian just going out the door? He's been hanging around the end of the bar.
Forget it. Redskins don't mean anything.
Of course not. How about a drink?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's drink to a gent who let 3 cents lead him into prison.
3 cents lead him into prison.
Here's to Luther Jones.
Here, Tonto bring note.
All right, give it to me.
What is it, Luther? Who is this Indian?
A friend of mine. Here, Tonto. I don't know why he wants my watch, but he's welcome to it.
Tonto, go now.
Well, what in the world? Luther Jones, I've been sitting outside this cell all morning to get you to explain what happened. Now an Indian walks in and you give him your watch. What does it all mean?
I don't know, Melissa. Honest, I don't.
Well, you can say something.
No, I can't. It's a promise I made, and I'm going to keep it.
It was almost noon when the regular daily stage left Plainfield for Cliff City.
Get on there, you critters!
Only one passenger rode inside the coach, a tall, bronze-faced man who might have been a cowboy. And only Tonto, who had stayed in Plainfield to see a United States Marshal, knew he was the Lone Ranger. 2 hours later, the coach topped a rise on the trail to Cliff City.
Oh, trainer! Fast road agents! Whoa! Whoa there! Whoa there! Whoa! Whoa! Whoa there!
Throw down that mail sack.
I ain't arguing with outlaws. Here, you can have it.
Carrying any passengers? Anybody inside?
Just one gently.
Never mind. We'll take care of them. All right, mister, climb out and keep your hands in the air.
Anything you say, but I haven't any money.
Search him, Saul.
Yeah. Oh, he's right. No wallet or poke. Just this watch.
What?
You wouldn't take that, would you? Doesn't belong to me.
Well, that's your hard luck. Now climb back inside, keep quiet, and you won't get hurt.
You heard what he said, mister. Now move.
And you're going to keep the watch?
Get in there and shut up.
All right.
Line out, driver, and keep your eyes front.
Yeah, sure. Get up! Get up!
Well, I guess we got away with that, all right. Now let's straddle our broncs and circle back to town.
Say, Sheriff, this ain't a bad-looking ticker you got from that Jasper.
Watch don't mean anything. This mail sack is what Atwood wants. Get up there.
Get up!
Every man, woman, and child who could crowd into Judge Bittner's courtroom was there to hear the trial of Luther Jones. Sheriff Peters and Saul Quigley told their eyewitness accounts of Luther's crime. And through it all, the quiet little bookkeeper said nothing. Then Judge Bittner rapped for order.
Quiet! Quiet in the court! Luther Jones, you have heard the evidence presented against you. Have you anything to say in your own defense?
Several things. First, it won't be any news to you, or to Mr. Atwood, Sheriff Peters, or Saul Quigley. But the trust fund in the bank, which was to be used to build a new school here in Cliff City, is short $30,000.
Quiet! That has nothing to do with your crime of stealing certain valuable papers from the desk of Mr. J.B. Atwood.
I wasn't stealing. I was merely trying to prove that $30,000 was missing.
Your Honor, as Luther Jones' former employer and president of the bank, I wish to state that his charge is ridiculous.
Then why did you arrange to have a letter stolen from the Plainfield stage this afternoon?
What's that?
A letter that would prove I'm right.
Why, you wrong. That's a lie.
It's the truth.
You can't...
Quiet! Young man, let me remind you that you're on trial.
I can prove what I say. The driver of the stage is in this room. Will you allow him to speak?
Well, Well, all right.
My stage was held all upright. No doubt about that. Two mass varmints did it. They stole the mail sack.
And what else? Wasn't a passenger robbed, too?
Yeah, a tall gent. But all they took from him was a pocket watch.
Good. I'm glad you remember it.
What is all this to do with
everything? The man who stole that watch also stole the letter which would prove that four men have taken $30,000 from the bank. And those four men are in this room.
Quiet! Quiet! I can't allow this to go on.
But you will allow me to introduce a witness in my defense.
Who is it?
The man who was with me in the bank last night. He's outside the door now.
Sheriff! Arrest that man, whoever he is.
You'll make a mistake if you try it, Sheriff. So will anyone else who reaches for a gun. Believe me, I'll shoot first.
Who are you and what do you want?
Justice for Luther Jones. He told the truth when he said the school fund has been robbed of $30,000. He told the truth when he said four men planned a second robbery to cover up the first one. Those men made one mistake.
What? What do you mean?
They also took a watch from a passenger on the stage. It's in the pocket of one of the men in this room now.
Judge Bittner, this man is...
What none of those men knew is this. The watch has an alarm on it. An alarm that is set for exactly 3 o'clock, just a few seconds from now. When it rings, it'll point to the guilty man.
Hey, what do you know about that?
But it won't be heard unless we remain quiet.
What the... Saul,
it ain't
you.
Me! I haven't got it!
Peter, I have it for you!
There are three of the men.
Peter, no. Saul, use your gun!
Yeah,
I warned you, Sheriff. All right, Tonto.
Me here, Kemosabe. Bring United States Marshal.
Yes, I heard everything that was said. And I think those three men will do more talking when I get them alone.
And you'll take care of it, Marshal?
Sure will. J.B. Atwood, Saul Quigley, and Sheriff Peters. Who's the fourth one?
Well, from the way he hurried off the bench, I think you'll find it's Judge Bittner.
He won't get far. Say, I don't know who you are, but that was a pretty slick stunt, finding out that those crooks had stolen an alarm watch from somebody. How'd you know it'd go off when you were here?
I didn't. As far as I know, they don't even have the watch, any of them.
They must have had it. I heard it ring.
No. What you heard, Marshal, was this bell I tied to my cartridge belt. See? All those men brought in here with a guilty conscience.
Well, I'll be...
Adios, Marshal. Come on, Toto.
Luther! Oh, Luther, I'm so proud of you.
Melissa, come here. Some of the businessmen here in town just told me they're going to ask that I take over Mr. Atwood's job. That means a raise. We can be married.
When?
Right now. Let's hunt up a preacher.
Luther, why, you're so different. I hardly know you, but I like the way you've changed.
That's because I've learned something I'm never going to forget.
What are you talking about?
Remember that message the Indian brought me when I was in jail?
Yes.
It was for my friend, the man with the mask. He told me what to do and say here in court. Then he added something else.
What was that?
It's at the end of his note. I'll read it to you. He says, always remember this. One man plus courage is a majority.
One man plus courage is a majority. Why, that's wonderful. But who is he? Did he sign his name?
It's written right here. The Lone Ranger.
Information on that. Today's show, the WXYZ show from Detroit, is pretty much just on records that I've acquired. I really have no background information or any of that. This one just simply says episode number 2. The Lone Ranger, it ran for 8 years, I guess starting in 1933. I can confirm that. Next, I did a show like this a couple of months ago with the Green Hornet and the Lone Ranger, because they were created by Fran Stryker and George Trendle. They're out of Detroit, hence the WXYZ. Perhaps next week I'll be back with the Shadow and the Six Shooter. Britt Ponsett. We had Britt Reed today. This is the Green Hornet. And apparently, the backstory, he is the great nephew of the Lone Ranger. There's a lot of backstory to all these stories. It's kind of interesting because they call him juvenile.